Chapter 12, Lessons from the Field, Playing, Coaching, and Calling the Game. I would be remiss if I didn't include a chapter about sports, playing them, coaching them, and officiating them, because they shaped who I am as much as anything else in my life. Like most kids growing up before electronic devices ruled our days, we lived outside. If you wanted to see your friends, you rode your bike, or made a call on a long-corded telephone, and hoped somebody answered. Sports weren't an extracurricular, they were a way of life. Being raised the son of a physical education teacher, coach, and official meant that every sport was on the menu at one point or another. You didn't always get to choose, you participated. Of all the lessons my father tried to teach me, the ones I ignored the most were about strength, training, and flexibility. Years of use, abuse, and stubbornness eventually caught up with me, and I know now those lessons would have paid dividends. Still, growing up that way made me competent at most sports and very good at a few. Baseball, for example, was something I ultimately walked away from in high school, not because I lacked ability, but because I understood reality. At a private boys' school where politics and money mattered as much as talent, the writing was on the wall. I ran track my last couple of years instead, partly to stay in shape, partly because I had to. I came back to the game later, though, through softball, playing in the fire department and beer leagues in my late teens. The pace of fast pitch hooked me immediately. It demanded quicker thinking, sharper reactions, and constant engagement, while baseball and slow pitch never really did it. Fast pitch became something I truly loved. In 2001, I stepped into what would become the most meaningful coaching chapter of my life. That August, just 10 days after September 11th, on my birthday, we entered into our first fall tournament. It wasn't just another weekend of softball, it was a selection tournament, and the country was still in shock. That context mattered. Everything felt heavier, more serious, more fragile. That year marked the beginning of the Adirondack Magic, a 14 and under girls team I helped form my friend James Farrow, who worked in the Department of Corrections. Along with two assistant coaches, we built what quickly became one of the strongest local club teams in the region and state. We competed with the best and earned every bit of respect we got. But only after one season, the group split, and I left with one assistant coach, eventually adding another, and formed the Capital Region Rampage. From 2002 through 2006, we played 5 full seasons together. We went to nationals multiple times, won tournaments, raised banners, and played more than 60 games a season. Nothing was handed to us. We earned our place every step of the way. One of the most memorable seasons came toward the end. By then, my L5-S1 disc issues had returned with a vengeance. I spent much of that national trip coaching from a bucket because standing or walking for long stretches was nearly impossible. Getting through airports meant stopping every 100 feet and bending over. My assistant coach, Ron, someone I've praised countless times over the years, walked every step with me without ever suggesting a wheelchair. Years later, it's almost ironic that wheelchairs became a necessity for travel. That season was special, but it also marked the beginning of the end. Like many programs, growing pains set in, college recruiting started to dominate conversations, the game shifted, lessons were learned, some the hard way. Regrets, accountability, and growth. I didn't get everything right as a coach. There are 2 decisions in particular that I regret deeply. One involved my assistant coach Tom and his daughter, a talented left-handed pitcher. I made a decision that fractured something that didn't need to break. At the time, I failed to see the full picture, including what Tom's family was dealing with privately. If I didn't say it enough then, I'll say it now. I'm sorry. The second regret involves Ron and his daughter. I hurt people I cared deeply about by not handling a situation with the clarity and courage I should have. Those moments stay with you. They should. Coaching isn't just about wins, it's about stewardship. I last saw Ron a few years ago when I gave him a piece of art I made from a score sheet from the Baseball Hall of Fame Members Tournament. It was 2017, the year Homer Simpson was inducted. The piece was layered with resin, full of hidden details and Easter eggs, including a small tear on Homer's face with the number 51 inside of it for Daryl Strawberry. A Mets fan, Ron's face lit up when he saw it. I still think about that moment. Ron, if you're hearing this, I love you. As I approached retirement in 2013, I knew officiating would be in my next chapter. My old friend John DeFlumer, rest in peace, had been a local umpire for years and encouraged me to get involved. John was a good man who always kept the kids' best interests at heart. Working games beside him was a privilege. In hindsight, I would have been a much better coach had I officiated first. Knowing how umpires think changes everything. I also spent time as an assistant coach at Siena College under P.J. Broom, a remarkable coach from Hawaii who openly lived with Tourette's syndrome. Standing on the base pass with her, watching signs, laughing, learning, and twitching, it was a unique experience. Ultimately, the pressure and emotional load became too much for me at the time, and I stepped away. I don't regret it. I took what I needed from it. When I officiated, especially in the pregame conferences, I used to ask the coaches a simple question. Is there anything strange you've never seen before? Then I'd tell them to watch closely, because for some reason, strange things seem to happen when I'm around. Triple plays, bizarre bounces, the kind of stuff you only see once. It became a running joke, and more often than not, it also came true. I learned that officiating is about control, but not domination. The best officials are mostly invisible. They let the game breathe. They step in only when necessary. One of the simplest lessons I learned was this. There are no balls and no strikes, only strikes, unless it's clearly a ball. Think about it. Basically, that's saying if it's close, it's a strike. But it's a way of thinking that keeps you consistent and fair. I also don't advise betting on a pitcher that can't throw a strike at any time to the first batter. It's just not her day. The rule book became second nature to me. If I spoke up about a rule, I was nearly certain I was right. If I wasn't, I was happy to explore it openly. Being a person of conscience means being willing to question yourself as much as others. I enjoyed solo games most. Extra pay, extra movement, more responsibility. You couldn't hide behind the plate. You had to hustle, get angles, and earn every call. Even now, I can spot a lazy or unprepared umpire instantly. At higher levels, there's just no excuse. Eventually, the travel, weather cancellations, and waiting around didn't fit my life, especially being busy with my dog business. But the memory stayed. Recently, I found a video I made for my daughter, Shana, something to remind her that all the miles were worth the smiles. And they were. Sports taught me discipline, accountability, humility, leadership, and restraint. They showed me who I was, and sometimes who I wasn't yet ready to be. Every chapter since has carried those lessons forward. And in the end, the game always tells the truth. Sports never taught me how to win at all costs. They taught me how to live with outcomes, earned or deserved, and how to own mistakes without hiding from them. Whether I was playing, coaching, or calling the game, the rules were always there. You could bend them in your head, complain about them, or pretend they didn't apply to you, but the truth had a way of surfacing eventually. It always does. What I learned early on is that authority means nothing without credibility. Respect isn't demanded, it's accumulated, quietly, over time, through consistency, fairness, and accountability. The best coaches, the best officials, and the best leaders rarely need to raise their voices. They let their conduct do the talking. Those lessons followed me long after the fields were behind me. They shaped how I viewed power, responsibility, and truth, especially when the stakes were no longer a game and the consequences weren't a missed call or lost season. When rules are weaponized instead of applied, when lies replace judgment, and when authority forgets its purpose, the difference becomes impossible to ignore. Once you've spent your life playing by the rules, even when no one is watching, you recognize it immediately when someone else isn't. And once you see it, you can't unsee it. That's where this story truly begins.